This is the March 24, 2014 Glen Ellyn School Board of Education regular meeting. The time is 7:30. I call the meeting to order. Mr. Kenwood, lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Please rise.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante.
Here.
Mr. Kenwood.
Here.
Mr. Alger.
Here.
Here. Here.
Mr. Ellis.
Here.
Erica, can you hear us?
Me?
Yes, that's you.
Sorry. Here.
Oh, Erica, can you hear us all?
I can. I'm Maureen's a little bit further back, so I thought it was me, but I'm here.
Okay.
Board member Erica Nelson is not able to attend the meeting in person due to employment-related obligations. In accordance with District 41 policy, Mrs. Nelson notified the superintendent's office that she would not be physically present for the board meeting but would like to participate in the meeting by phone. We have a motion to approve Mrs. Nelson's participation by phone in tonight's board meeting.
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Elger, second by Mr. Escalante. Roll call, please.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Buchanski?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Motion carries. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representative for response if a response is warranted. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time?
Liz Vogel.
Mrs. Vogel, whenever you're ready.
My name is Liz Vogel. I am the PTA president at Churchill, and I have a letter that is addressed to the Board of Education members and to Dr. Gordon that is signed by me and all the officers of Churchill PTA. Some of them are here today. As representatives of Churchill PTA, we would like to voice our support for the recently approved elementary school additions. Although the Phase 1 plan only partly addresses our critical facility needs at Churchill, we believe it is a step in the right direction. Furthermore, we think it is wise to use district reserves to begin the work before asking for more taxpayer money, in part because it shows that we have learned from the referendum failures in neighboring districts. We are disappointed that Churchill will be one of the last to benefit from the Phase 1 plan, especially considering that our school building is among the most crowded in the district. However, we understand that the characteristics of the individual school sites have dictated the order of the Phase 1 plan. Upon the completion of Phase 1, Churchill and Lincoln will still have portable classrooms, and Ben Franklin and Forest Glen will have no portables. It is obvious to us that this is an inequitable situation which poses disadvantage to our Churchill community. In addition to becoming below parity in our facilities, Churchill also has many other challenges, including a low income percentage of over 40%, which broadly impacts the school's academic and social environment, a large and highly fragmented ELL population with many valid but resource-consuming needs, and our status as the only choice school in the district, in part the result of this district's decision to concentrate Title I funds at Churchill. While we understand the pragmatism of wanting to take full advantage of Title I funds while only subjecting one school to No Child Left Behind's punitive progressive actions, it has isolated Churchill as the only choice school in D41. There is no doubt that the stigma of being a choice school would be far less if the other schools in the district that qualify for Title I also shared our status. Every resident within Churchill's boundaries has seen a negative effect on property values as a result of this stigma, the combined loss of which has to dwarf the Title I funds received by the district. So when the facility disadvantages are layered in with the other Churchill challenges, the result is a widening gap of inequity across the elementary schools in D41. which is unfair to Churchill taxpayers and, most importantly, can hinder Churchill students. Despite, or perhaps because of these challenges, Churchill parents have consistently been some of the strongest supporters of district initiatives. We understand that a referendum is likely required to complete the facility work, and we intend to strongly support that effort. Our expectation is, given a phase, I'm sorry, expectation given the phase inequity across schools at the end of phase one, that Churchill's needs will be among the first addressed in a phase two plan, and that there will be no additional facility improvements at the schools without portables before our portables are removed.
So that's 3 minutes. Do you have a lot more?
I have two more sentences.
Okay. Sorry.
However, we are concerned that the two schools with no portables after phase one will not have the same incentive to support a referendum, which makes the uphill battle of passing a tax-raising referendum in Glen Ellyn even more difficult. So thinking through the scenarios, we want to communicate our strong expectation that should a referendum be rejected by the voters, the Board of Education will immediately identify and implement solutions to restore facility parity across the elementary schools. Restoring parity in facilities through successful referendum or alternative solutions is the board's and district's obligation. It is our right as taxpayers, and it is the fair thing to do for Churchill students. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. Anyone else? Mr. Second?
Thank you.
No?
Okay.
You can see the talent this evening.
Thank you.
Okay, presentations, reports, and initiatives. PTA Executive Council, Mrs. Massey, I see your bright, smiley face. You may proceed when you're ready.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for putting us on the agenda at the meetings. There were several wonderful events since we've been here 2 weeks ago. One of the big ones that I wanted to talk about was at Forest Glen just this past weekend. They held their Forest Glen Choice Awards. It was a huge success. They had over 175 kids participate between the ages of kindergarten and fifth grade, about 50 to 60 parent volunteers, and at least 25 teachers and staff. It was a sold-out show with over 600 tickets sold, and they actually had a waiting list. So what it is, it's their drama production. And it's held over at Parkview Church. And what they do is they do video clips in advance, and they show the clips up on the big screens, and then they have awards that they call out, and they actually had some of the teachers actually the ones that did the recipients of the awards, and you know, kind of like if you went to the Academy Awards and they thanked their directors and producers, etc., and they dressed up in suits and tuxes and came up on stage with tiaras. They had the red carpet out. So, it's Jen Corona, who's one of the parents, that she created this event. So it's been several years that they've had it, and her youngest is a fifth grader, so she's surely to be missed in the upcoming years, big shoes to fill as far as that event in the future. And then Mary Hornacek and then Ms. Carraza were the MCs for the night. So, and Jen Lewis couldn't be here this evening. She was been a little ill, but she said it truly was a reflection of their Forest Glen community. It was an opportunity for the teachers, the students, and the parents to all gather and really show what their school dynamic's all about. Over at Churchill, they just had their high interest day, and so I thought Liz would just chime in on that. That was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, I've been really pleased with the way that our high interest days have progressed over the years. I mean, parents volunteered to put on these classes, so some of them are more like crafts, but given our group of students, we have been trying to move them to potentially things that expose children to new careers. So we had several groups of professional musicians there. We had a guilty versus innocent, which actually exposed the kids to all the terminology of a courtroom and trial, and my son was the defendant, unfortunately.
How do you do?
Maybe, but he was guilty. Well, I have no doubt that that was the right call. It's great to expose kids to things like that. We have ambitions for the future, too, to bring in some things about personal finances and other things as well. I also should plug, we had our second annual parent social fundraiser last Saturday night. We did one last year for the first time ever, and we raised some funds for Churchill Cares, which is our in-house community outreach where we raise funds to help our own low-income kids. And we also wanted to supplement the amount of money we contribute towards field trips, and our kids are going to go on some great field trips from the money we raised last year. This year we raised 2.5 times what we raised last year. So field trips, and we're going to obviously do Churchill Cares. We're going to get to do our international fair again, which we're glad we weren't sure how we were going to pay for that, and maybe some other things, but we're pretty excited.
That's great.
And then the last thing was Hadley. Hopefully some of you guys had the opportunity to see the Hadley Theater Arts production of The Little Mermaid. About 90 students participated, whether it was behind the scenes or on stage. Fantastic performance. You know, I'm always so amazed and impressed with the challenge that our students have, and the three staff members that have been supporting it. This is the 6th year of the Hadley Theater Arts production, so hopefully, like I said, that some of you were able to come out and see those kids perform. So it was fantastic. That's all right for now. Well, thank you very much.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, moving on. Action items. The consent agenda. Any items board members would like to remove from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes human resources personnel report, employment recommendations, the finance, facilities, and operations report, including the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, school district payment order, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property report, 2013-2014 FOIA report, and other matters, including the approval of the board meeting minutes from the March 10, 2014 Board of Education regular meeting and the March 10, 2014 Board of Education regular meeting closed session. We have a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Elger, second by Mr. Buchinski. Roll call, please.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson? Mrs. Nelson?
Erica, can you hear us?
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis? I'm sorry. Mr. Buchinski?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Yes, that's 6 yeas, no nays. Motion carries. Okay, superintendent's recommendations.
The FQC contract. That we are recommending the approval of the FQC contract overall.
Let me do this first.
Yeah. Sorry, jumped right on to you. Well, once I started going, I just decided to keep going.
The Frederick Quinn Corporation, the FQC, contract agreement. The administration is recommending approval of FQC contract that was discussed by the board in the March 10, 2014 meeting related to the elementary additions project. Contract specifies $1,285,110 for services like construction coordination and scheduling, review of bid documents, cost estimating, and allocation of construction activities among contractors. We have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation.
Motion.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Buchinski, second by Mr. Escalante. Any discussion?
This is Erica. I know that I asked Jack about this, and he may be in the audience
Hi,
Jack. And you had responded to it, but just in lieu of the fact that we have the recommendation in front of us, I just want to make sure that there's some explicit, not necessarily language, but opportunity for there to be some check-ins with the board as it progresses. I know you talked about that, but that would be important for me so that we don't lose sight of, you know, how it's progressing, and no surprises, I guess, is what I'm looking for.
So you're asking for periodic updates from FQC, right?
Yeah, okay. And I know that, Jack, you spoke to that the last time, but I just want to make sure that's in there.
Is that accurate, Jeff?
Yeah, that's accurate. At least once a month we'll give a board update.
Okay.
Right, okay.
They'll be part of the
finance facility update that you give and projects and timelines and all of where we're spending money, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you. Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah. Any other discussion items, comments? I read the entire contract. I noted that our attorneys also have read the contract and vetted it, so I don't have any issues with it at all.
This was the contract that was in the RFP, too. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Wyszynski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes, that's six yeas, no nays. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. Okay, the 2014 Elementary School Edition Funding Recommendation. At the Board of Education March 10, 2014 meeting, the Board approved the Finance Committee's recommendation to pay for the estimated $15 million Elementary School Edition project with a loan of $7 million to be repaid over 15 years, reserve funds of approximately $7 million, and approximately $1 million from the operating funds. Administration recommends approval and adoption of the resolution of a resolution providing for an installment purchase agreement in order to build and equip additional classrooms at the Franklin, Lincoln, Churchill, and Forest Glen school buildings, authorizing the issuance of the district's general obligation limited tax debt certificate series 2014 of said school district, evidencing the rights to payment under said agreement, and providing for the sale of the certificate. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to adopt a resolution authorizing and providing for an installment purchase agreement for the purpose of paying the cost of purchasing real or personal property or both in and for School District 41, DuPage County, Illinois, and for the issuance of a $7 million general obligation limited tax debt certificate, series 2014, of said school district, evidencing the rights to payment under said agreement and providing for the security for and means of payment under said agreement and of said certificate. Everybody got that?
Set.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a lot of legal language that's required to be in the recommendation. So do I have a motion?
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Escalante, second by Mr. Wyszynski. Any discussion on this?
I'll be brief. I'll be voting no, as I indicated last time. I don't think we need the money now. We'll need it for phase one. We can fund this out of our reserves right now, my understanding, for this year. So we don't have to go get the money now. I understand the Finance Committee is managing risk by managing the interest rate fluctuation. For me, risk has different components than just, what you see in the spreadsheet around interest rates. It has to deal with, to me, a message of going to borrow money when we don't exactly need it. We don't really know the true cost of phase one yet. So maybe next year, we'd say instead of $7 million, we want $8 million, or maybe we want $5 million, because we don't really know. We're getting those estimates, and we have a good track record of the estimate initially, but that's not a guarantee with the properties that we're working on that will have the same results. So I feel that we're doing something we don't need to do right now, and I understand the managing the risk piece of it from an interest rate, but I think it just, to me, sends the wrong message, because we could do it next year, have our plan finalized by then, and, we're basically signing up the administration anywhere from $320,000 of operating costs to $645,000 worth of operating costs in the future. And we don't have to do that right now. I just don't see it. So I'll be voting no, and I'll leave it at that.
But we'll have to do it next year, right?
We would have to do something next year, yes, but what it is until... maybe what we would say is we have to borrow $8 million because we realize the cost of Churchill, or maybe we decide based on some community input, let's do the 8 portables instead of just the 4 that's in phase one, and maybe we can find out we can do that with the construction people there already for another $1.5 million. So we say, okay, instead of borrowing $7 million, let's borrow $8.5 million. I mean, there are just a lot of what ifs that we don't know. We don't need the money. There's a cost associated with taking the money now versus later to the district. that cost may not be more than the change in interest rates, but you know, we've been hearing interest rates are going to go up now for many years, and they've been fairly low for a historically long period of time.
Just point of clarification, in the last, since May of last year, they've gone up 110 basis points.
Mm-hmm.
So in an analysis I presented at the last Finance Committee and at the Board of Education meeting was 100 basis points. So I don't know that your statement, they have gone up a lot.
Sure, but they could
the
go down.
The other thing is,
they could go down a lot too.
Even in your scenario that you said, which I don't think is what we approved 16 classrooms, and that's what this motion's about.
Mm-hmm.
Just, so that's a point of clarification. If you did want to modify and later add four more classrooms on, you could then borrow the $1.5 million, having hedged the risk of borrowing the $7 million today, which is what our recommendation is. Just so you know, that's not just that. Isn't the only solution to a modification to the plans as you suggest.
I understand this is all about managing interest rate risk. That's what this is about.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a point of clarification. It's not an either or on your example of a change or a modification to the 16 classroom proposal by making a 20 classroom proposal.
So we don't have the ability to modify something next year, is that what you're implying?
No, that's not what I'm implying. What I'm implying is it's not that if you did do it, there's only one way to do it, which is what you said, is to make it $8.5 million next year. You could do the $7 million this year, then modify it and borrow another $1.5
million
if your budget allowed it. So, of course, it depends.
Would have additional costs, but again, we don't know what the interest rate would be.
Okay, I don't think
I agree with that.
Okay, any other comments?
Sure, I'll comment. Janet, I do appreciate your input, and I do understand your concern and can appreciate the idea of moving that out because we do incur a cost right now by doing this. And what you're saying, I believe, is if we put this off to next year, we could defray that cost that we're going to spend this year for that, you know, for 1 year.
One of my points is that, and the other point is that we could also have the full understanding of the full cost of phase one.
Yeah, and I do understand that the reason I'm going to vote yes is that I feel that when we made the commitment to get phase one done, I want to make sure we follow through for the funding right now, when we're voting on it as a board right now, to ensure that that happens, not only because the interest rate could go up, a lot of other things could happen. So what I want to do is, the reason I'm going to vote yes now is that I feel it's part of when we make our commitment to say, let's do phase one, we have to provide the funds for it. That's a good way to do it. I did go through your risk analysis, and I've attended some of the meetings, and I have to tell you, when I started, I didn't understand any of this. I probably understand it a little bit better right now, but it does appear that the cost of that insurance, of buying, you know, getting it done now as opposed to waiting, is worth the risk that could happen, especially with the fact that they haven't started to tick up a little bit.
Anyone else?
I just want to make one quick comment, and that is that part of sitting on some of the finance committees was when the bids were being, the numbers were being put together, that I don't have my materials in front of me, so correct my memory, but that the bids came in and they were under what the estimates were. Is that correct, Jack?
I think they were under by about $200,000.
Yes.
$200,000, right.
That's correct, Eric.
You know, I think that from a, you know, from an assessment standpoint in terms of estimates, that we should feel confident that the estimators at FQC and Jack's oversight on this is going to keep us ahead of that, which is why I ask for those monthly updates so that, you know, to your point, John, if there's some shift in materials costs or something significant that happens, we're going to have a heads up on that. And for me, that was a another part of this. So I hear what you're saying, and I think there's validity in you know, all positions. But I would say that when sitting in a finance and walking through some of this with Joe and Patrick and Drew, it makes sense to mitigate the risk now, have those dollars in place, and if there's cost savings to be found, maybe we can move up some of our plans as well. We could look at this from a more optimistic point of view as well. So So appreciate that, and thank the Finance Committee again for their work.
My only comments are, you know, John has, you know, his thought out process on what he's going to do or how he's coming up with his decision, which is fine. That's, you know, this isn't a dictatorship. We're not trying to, we all vote on it. So I'm not going to try to convince John of a different path that Finance has taken, but I'm still behind the recommendation that came out of Finance Committee. I mean, there again, there's multiple ways to do this, but from a Finance Committee perspective, I think Drew, Joe, and I, this is the recommendation. And I'm not going to try to convince John of a different path, because that's what Finance Committee is for. So.
And I agree with that assessment, and I'm going to defer, obviously, as I have in the past, to the Finance Committee's recommendation. There are three very astute, and sometimes four when Dean appears at Finance. There's astute financial minds, much so than mine, so I appreciate the hard work that was done on this, and I know a lot of time was spent on this, so I'm also going to vote for the recommendation. So, roll call, please, Mrs. Stecker.
Mr. Bochansky?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
No.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes, that's five yeas, one nay. Motion carries. Okay, superintendent's report.
Okay, now it's my turn.
Now it's your
turn. Got a little excited about that. I have one brief piece. It's regarding the community listening tours. We are looking to make a change on the dates with everything that's been going on. It's been, I just want to ensure that these are high quality sessions. So the dates will be April 23rd and then May 3rd. They'll be going out through a sign up, an electronic sign up that we will be sending out to community at large. We'll be reaching out to a number of different organizations to ensure that they're part of it and have opportunities to participate with us in this true community listening and an opportunity to get multiple perspectives throughout, from our parents to the 80% of community members who do not have students within our schools. So it should be a great opportunity from the sessions of really looking around finance and facilities, looking at the community engagement, and then educating that 21st century student to bring people together to really try to think about those issues differently, to work from a PBL, a space where we're asking our students to work from to help us solve some of these issues. As opposed to sit and just listen and pull all those pieces in, really have the community engaged in the issues themselves and working together as a team to come up with ideas that are maybe different ways of solving some of the issues that are facing us today. Sorry, about ready to sneeze. So that piece will be changing from that from the early April just to the April 23rd and May 3rd. Julie, anything you want to add to it?
No, I think you pretty much summed it up. May 3rd is a Saturday, so that will be a Saturday morning. And the April 23rd is Wednesday, and that will be in both at the Hadley Library Community
Center. Any questions?
This is a district-directed... tour.
Yes, this is myself and Julie have taken the lead on this. No other outside organization is helping us to facilitate this conversation. It is in-house developed, in-house created. We'll keep you updated on it, but we will be putting out a number of different communication throughout the entire organization.
Julian, I know we talked about this at council, but not only engaging our parents from our schools, but Have we thought about how we're getting that other 70-80%?
Yeah, we're going to be reaching out to, you know, all the different clubs, to the park district, to other different organizations, brochures, whatever we have, to really say, here, please sign up. We want your input. We want to hear from you.
Are we going to them and saying, we will sit there at your function, your meeting, or are we saying, please come to ours?
Will I go? And us? I think that's that piece.
I think for this, aren't we inviting them to
just
these sessions?
Yeah.
What I think you and I and others have talked about is we also want to go out to their meetings.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Board members have volunteered to say, why don't, if we can get a list and get on their dates, that we'll try to split it up between ourselves and go to their meetings to make sure that if they want to ask us questions, we can do that there as well.
Yeah, this one will be first be inviting in, but I think it might be a nice segue into the board members expressing interest in attending their meetings as well, because I think it does need to be more of that partnership. John?
Yeah, I thought I saw an email. Is this the one where you were saying that you would limit it to two board members?
We are looking to try to open it up beyond that.
Okay. I would like to be able to do that because there's only 2 dates.
And we would add a third if we have more interest. Yeah. So we're holding a third date.
It's just even getting us, you know, some travel, some don't. So yeah. I think you should open them all up so that we can.
Can we do that, though?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I raised that issue with Paul, too, John, so I'm glad you brought that up, because I know there's concern of Open Meetings Act and also having to run this like a regular board meeting where we have to formally open it, et cetera. But, John, correct me if I'm wrong, when we had the Master Facility Plan meetings, this is the example that I gave to Paul and Julie, there were two board members who served on it, you and also Bob Solak, right?
There were two that officially served on it, and a third that...
That's right.
And a third that...
But then, I know Steve wanted to serve on it, Steve Ondrak, but then when there were open meetings, I remember attending a couple of those, and as board members, we, were, sensitive to and aware of not sitting with each other, not having conversations before, during, or after the meeting, but being there just to listen to what was going on, so... I had, mentioned that to Paul in an email that I think it would be important if we can, attend more than one of these, that would be great, and not to have to limit it to just two board members because of Open Meetings Act. So hopefully you can...
Yeah, we're working on that.
We were able to do it before, so I'm assuming we can do it.
Yeah. I was in conversation with Todd today, so
yeah.
I'm hoping that will expand.
Good.
Any other questions?
Just one other thought to this, and I just wanted to share this with board members so you can think about this a little bit. But I mentioned to Paul that in one of the publications we get, there were the Magna Awards that were awarded to school districts for different activities that were board directed or guided, and there were technology communication. But one idea that caught my interest, and I sent Paul and Julie this, was... a school, and I'm forgetting where they're from, but they had what they called an expedition group or expedition program, and they identified 25 leaders within their community, thought leaders, folks with children in the currently in schools, children, folks who had children go through the system, folks that never had children in the school district, to engage them in ongoing conversations, tours, activities that would help them understand the nuances of the district from a more internal perspective. So I wanted to present that just as a thought process that might come out of these community listening sessions, if there might be people interested in getting involved. At the end of our spring last year with the property on College Avenue, there were several, phone calls that came in post that with community members saying, I need to better understand what's going on, I need to get more involved. And so perhaps there's an opportunity out of these listening sessions to have people do that. So
absolutely.
I'd like to keep that in mind.
So we're basically, Paul, turning this 180 degrees, right, instead of us leading it, having the community try to lead this, right? And so have we worked with the council and the PTA local?
We will be.
To say, hey, we need you to lead, chair, advocate a table or conversation?
It really, they're going to have facilitator guides on the table. It is a community table that will be facilitating their conversations.
Okay.
But it, I believe the structure we're creating is going to be more beneficial to the district. We'll get a solution coming out of it, where community members, groups of people really tackle these problems and try to solve them. But we absolutely hope our PTAs are well represented, and I'm sure they will be at our table groups.
I get, you know, this is a big step for us. I mean, we need this information. So
absolutely.
From a PTA council, I mean, your neighbors and your friends, even if they're not in PTAs, and hey, you want to participate in, you know, steering the community's direction, strategic direction for your schools. I know you're retired, but, you know, maybe you want to participate in this conversation and lead and help. So this is the steam and the ground momentum that
I would agree, Patrick,
for you guys to, not you guys, us, to hear that information to drive these directions. So any help would be helpful. We appreciate it.
All right.
Anything else?
That was it.
Okay.
Told you it was brief.
It was brief. Board reports.
Finance, we had Finance Drew, unfortunately, was out ill. A couple topics that we talked about, document camera rollouts and classroom equipment recommendations. To kind of tee it up, the Finance Committee has asked Bob and Mike to kind of help formulate and help communicate a strategic vision and how all the technology lines up to each other, because we're at this moment right now, though a lot of the recommendations and every recommendation they bring to us helps and it's very well thought out, it's kind of, I won't say piecemeal, but it's very individualized and itemized, and we just want to make sure the pieces are fitting to the puzzle. So we're asking Mike and Bob to, in the coming conversations, that they continue to keep finance and facilities updated on how this particular technology is leading to the resources or the strategy or the learning capabilities that we're trying to get the students. Two things on the docket: document camera rollout. It's kind of, to me, old school. It's an overhead projector for the new age. It's highly recommended by a few of the teachers that have had it out there. About 82 that they're looking to bring to the board for approval. It will help facilitate conversations in the individual classrooms. Highly recommended with those teachers that have it now. One good thing that we heard out of finance is this was a high priority for the schools, and the schools are going to be actually, I don't want to say funding it, but they're actually putting skin in the game to help buy these versus just basic budgeted money out of the overall administrative technology bucket. The other one was technology, Google, Chromebooks getting rolled out for our Hadley students. Again, another conversation of how the cost is going to be saved and offset through the reduction of McAfee licensing servers being retired because we don't really need it. We're going to cloud-based computing. So all of those things that were coming to the board, we asked Mike and Bob to say, when you come to the board, be prepared to say not only what the cost is, but the savings that's going to be coming with that if we go this direction. So, and then that's it.
Furniture,
21st century furniture. Last year of the fifth year of a 5-year rollout of the classroom furniture, and $129,000
in 2014-15 budget. So, on the document cameras, you said some of them put skin in the game.
Yeah, we have. It's each individual school apparently has their own. Yeah, has their own budget.
Oh, it's coming.
Yeah, they're building budget.
And then, Mike, I don't know the latest on Google, but I do know that there have been some security concerns sometimes around Google for some of the apps that they have that are out there for free, and dealing with student information and things like that. We just want to make sure we've got a robust process for evaluating that and making sure other schools are doing it. It's one of the reasons that some companies I know haven't gone there yet, even though I know there's a business case and it makes sense. So just want to make sure that...
And we have. The way we structured our domain is it's a closed environment. So you can only communicate within the domain. So students wouldn't be able to send or receive mail from outside the domain. But we've not opened up the app store for students. So that's something that we're still researching ourselves, and we'll filter that down when we're comfortable with the apps that we've selected.
So when you say we're going to have our own domain, it'll still be in the cloud, it'll be shared?
It's still in the cloud, but it's an education domain, so it still leverages our e41.org domain. And it allows us the management capability of being able to close that off to certain things, like email. And we already have our firewall filter and proxy filter in place for internet service. So.
And that's where we as a district will have to shift a little. You know, we're shifting some of that responsibility to them. We've got to make sure that we test that thoroughly. That's where the issue is around Google, from what I've heard.
Correct.
Okay. Any other reports?
We met in policy committee on the 14th and finalized some of the policies that we're going to be bringing forth, I think, today for first reading. So another couple of hours through it, we think we really improved a few of the policies. A lot of good give and take, a lot of good problem solving, and hopefully you guys will all agree that these are the policies you can support.
Hadley went to state on orchestra.
Again, yes.
And they got a perfect score.
Did they?
Yeah, it's not something that they've traditionally done. So they got a perfect score from all three judges. And are on their way to state.
Wow.
Which is good news.
Very impressive.
Very impressive, mm-hmm. Given, you know, the program was changed and there was a lot of collaboration on how to change it and still maintain the level of, you know, integrity and fidelity.
This is Eric.
Hi, Eric.
I'm sorry, is John done?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. We had a supplemental pay committee meeting today. Of course, I wasn't there, but Lori forwarded the minutes from the meeting. Thank you, Lori. And I just want to let the board know that we always have a spring proposal for any new supplemental pay activities that teachers might be interested in supporting as kids come to them with some requests. So the timeline for that is April 14th. We'll send out the email on proposals. The 28th is the due date for any new proposals, and then on May 5th the committee will review them and make recommendations, so we're going to bring that back to the board once we look at the proposals and determine that. The other piece of this that we've been working on under Lori and Wendy Pistini, who co-chair their guidance, is to make sure we have numbers on participation, and Steve Ivory, Principal at Hadley, has given us those numbers, so we'll have a update on student counts, but be able to keep an eye on, you know, what groups, as we talked about before, we need to sunset potentially, and you know, leaving room from some other new ones as appropriate to start up. So that's where we are. Our next meeting is May 5th.
Okay.
If we're in the other section of
let me get to CIT met Thursday the 20th. We spent a lot of time on the benchmarking study that was recently completed. The group broke out into smaller groups, and each group had one of the district schools. And our tasks were to find a comparable school that was most like the district school that we had. And so that was actually kind of fun and very informative. And there was a lot of positives and negatives about each. And I think overall we felt as though our schools were, if not better, at least as good as the comparable schools that we had. Paul, Lori, am I missing anything on that?
No. It was interesting once you started looking at the demographics, the size of schools, were they unit districts, how quickly things were starting to fall off from the comparability side of things, and really trying to look at schools that were like Churchill, but who maybe outperforming them. Why was that? What were they doing? How were they doing their work? So it was a fascinating study into different schools throughout the state that were on that benchmarking study that we had. So each of the schools were looked at, and each of the schools were studied to see what are those possibilities. So that's where CIT is still currently working from.
Is there going to be a follow-up to that, Paul, in terms
of
action steps or suggestions for the school improvement plans then?
Correct, and BLT will be a part of those as well.
Great.
Okay, other reports. Joe, you had something?
I went to Hadley's PTA meeting on March 11th. Main discussion at that PTA meeting, Steve Dively talked about the PARC testing. There's a lot of discussion on that. They're doing, I don't want to call it simulated, but they're doing some PARC testing, not the whole, the whole sit down for what I learned was a lot more hours than I thought. It's 7+ hours of testing, which I gained a lot of knowledge of listening to the discussion. I asked a lot of questions too, actually. So it was informative. I enjoyed listening to it. It was good. Also, they had 6 wrestlers qualify for state. I also know after that fact, because I think it was that weekend, they had 2 place. So it was good.
6 of them?
6 guys qualified, 6 boys qualified, 2 placed in state. So
6 qualified for state, what?
Wrestling?
State tournament.
Yeah, I have kind of a like for what wrestling. Coach has done a good job with those boys, so I like what I see out of there. I did go to the Little Mermaid, and it was fantastic on Saturday night. And I got to tell you, the level of the voice, the aerial was great. I mean, everybody else was too. It was a really good performance. I enjoyed it. My family enjoyed it too.
That's wonderful.
I didn't go to Little
Mermaid.
Sorry, I didn't go to the Little Mermaid. My daughter, my 6th-grade daughter did. Uh-huh. Echoes all those statements as well. So I can't say that I went, but I heard it was a fantastic production. Sorry, Erica, go ahead.
That's right. I was going to just 2 quick things. One was I just want to publicly thank one of the directors from the performances, Gene Corrado, Lori Palmisano, but also Kim Cervatka, who in fact is moving out of state. So she's been there for 6 years along with her colleagues and has just provided a ton of free time and energy to the kids. So thanks to Kim for 6 great years. And certainly to the other directors as well. It couldn't happen without them. It was a great show. The other report I had, and I'm sorry, I just found my note on it, was right after our board meeting the last time on Tuesday night was the Churchill PTA meeting. I want to thank Liz from afar for sharing tonight in public participation there. Because of the proximity to the board meeting, we talked at length in my board report about the decision on facilities. A lot of good input from them and some discussion around phase 2 and needs of Churchill. So thank Liz for codifying those, and I'll look forward to getting a copy of that too. Just lots of great energy at the school. I just want to highlight their commitment as a board, new board members coming on. I'm sure we see that at the other elementaries as well. A lot of energy from our kindergarten parents to come in and immediately take the reins and get involved. So it's always heartening to see that on the PTA level and how much PTAs do other than what I think the perception is, which is, activities and classroom parties. Could not do half of what we do at our schools without that leadership and then ramping that up to council. The other thing I wanted to mention is because of that meeting, I reached out to parents at the meeting and offered, to meet one-to-one and have 2 really good conversations with parents about their interests, their needs, what they like about the school, and just trying to gather some information. So that was helpful, and I'll, look forward to doing that at the other schools, too. Very good meeting. Went kind of long, though, Liz, right? Didn't get out there till, 9:30. But a good meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Erica.
Anything else? Okay. Discussion items. The copier refresh. Administration recommends the board approve the copier refresh at the April 14th Board of Education meeting. Mike, any comments on the board report?
Well, these copiers we've had in place for the last 12 years are on a three-year refresh cycle. Fair market value lease, so at the end of that three-year cycle, they go back to the leasing company. Same will hold true with this new fleet of copiers. We have it for 3 years, and that lease is over. Those copiers will go back. So this is the normal or natural refresh cycle we put in place for the copiers.
Any questions?
No.
Comments? Mike, I, the only thing I noticed was that, unless I'm looking at it wrong, the COTG, the Chicago, their bid was a little lower?
A little bit lower. We've worked with both companies in the past, and we've worked with both product lines in the past, and given our previous experience, quality of service and product with Conoco was superior. So that was really the reasoning or the rationale behind my decision.
And when I say a little lower, it's what, $1,300?
Right.
When in a bid of $390,000-ish.
Right.
So that's a very infinitesimal.
Right, over the course of those 3 years.
Okay, so that's the rationale for. Okay.
And you talked about them. You had experience with them before.
Both.
Yeah.
Both companies, both products. Several times.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions?
Mike, I know that part of your emphasis with the technology rollout, you know, across the district has been to try and reduce paper. And I don't have, you know, the last refresh information, obviously, but do you notice there being less use of copies? Is there any way to assess that, where we're having to do less refresh on copiers?
Well, the consumption of paper, and I hope you can hear me, but...
I can.
Kind of structured the payment for the supplies and the services a little different than we have in the past, so we can keep a closer eye on exactly how much we're printing, how much it's costing us to print. We'll check that on a quarterly basis rather than doing it on an annual contract. So it is something we're going to keep a much closer eye on moving forward.
That's great. I know that you would like us all to be greener.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
But I think that's smart to do, because then we can also see it even seasonally, and you know, just to have a better handle on, you know, what we're sending and even where, and which buildings are maybe using more or less and why, and you know, that just adds to, you know, the ability to tighten it up a bit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, this will come back for action on the April 14th meeting. The iPad refresh. The administration recommends the board approve the copier for the iPad refresh at the April 14th board event. Mike, again on this one.
This is just a refresh of equipment we already have. As I told the Finance Committee, it's an apples-to-apples replacement. We're not changing much there. It's going to be the same. The same technology specs, for the most part, is just a newer model of it. So we're just kind of replacing what we already have. Those as well are on a three-year refresh cycle, and we just hit the end of that 3 years. So it's time to refresh the newer equipment.
And we're using the same vendor?
We get all that stuff directly from Apple.
Yeah.
So there's no middleman.
Okay. We like the Apple platform. We're not considering any Android or anything.
We'll still evaluate other platforms. And as we move forward, we may recommend some different platforms. But for right now, Apple is fitting our needs. We've already invested in several apps for these products as well. So we're not ready to cut bait with Apple at this point, but it doesn't mean we won't continue to evaluate other products as well.
Okay. Any other questions for Mike?
Mike, I'm just wondering how the iPads have held up in terms of wear and tear.
They've held up pretty well, actually, surprisingly well. We don't get one drop from time to time, but we do get protective cases for them. That's also part of the recommendation. The newer iPads are a little slimmer, a little bit more streamlined, but we do try to protect them with those covers, with those cases, and for the most part, they've held up very well, surprisingly.
Good. Well, that shows some respect on the behalf of the children using them, too, and teachers, so it's good.
Okay. This will come back again on the April 14th board meeting for action. Thanks, Mike. Okay, policy... Board policy revisions, the first reading. Policy committee spent hours reviewing and updating a number of policies for the full Board of Education to review. The vast majority of the changes are recommendations from the IASB's press division. Press, for folks who don't know that, is a subscription service provided by the Illinois State Bar Association, who has a full-time staff who updates the basic policies on a quarterly basis, I believe it is. Legal yeah. updates, language updates, anything that we as a district would need. We subscribe to that service. They do send us the updates, and a majority of our revisions are those updates. There are also two other policies that we reviewed, which are the expense policy, which I'm looking
560.
For 560, and the supplemental materials policies, which
6210.
6210 and the thank you, Paul.
Yep.
And the accompanying policies. You all have seen these in your board packets. So I guess what we start with, is there any general questions for any of these policies before we get into the specific ones?
I had one on the tobacco prohibition.
Which policy is that, Joe?
It's 550, page 112 in our board packet.
Okay.
First
okay.
paragraph, top of the page.
Yep.
113 maybe for some. The way I read this is if I'm a smoker, no smoking in the buildings.
I know what you're talking about.
During yep. the day, whatever. Yep. But it says that while an employee is performing work for the district at a school event, regardless of the event's location, tobacco shall have. You cannot smoke at all. Is that so? If there's some event and there's a smoking area, you know, for. I mean, I assume we have some employees that smoke.
I would assume.
So if there's an event and there's a legitimate smoking area provided at this event where someone can step out and have a cigarette, they're not allowed to do that.
They're not allowed to do that. So if Hadley had an event over at Ackerman, if you're a District 41 employee per this policy, you are still working with our students during that event, and that would be a violation of that policy.
And what's the ramification for that?
You know, this is one that came, as Sam alluded to, from press,
right.
Around the legal aspects of it. The background of it. I'm not sure where it started from. And why they made that change from that perspective, but I can also see from that's not an activity you're going to be engaging in around students during the school day. I mean, to me, that's the basis of it.
It just seems like, I mean, I'm not a smoker, but it seems if someone's a smoker to go the duration like that without going to a authorized area, it just seems like it'd be hard to do, and essentially.
But we have tobacco-free zones around our schools, and I can't remember the yardage. It's like 50. Can't remember.
Yeah, that, the that's actual yardage. My question: if the person steps out into a legitimate,
I think if you're outside of that boundary, I would assume so. But there's no smoking within school grounds, on school grounds, or anywhere else. Lori. So.
Yeah, no, that one was clear, the number one, the property. The other one, though, seemed like you'd be violating the policy if you went the 50 yards and smoked a cigarette and came back for it. It just seemed to me a very hard thing to enforce.
John, I think it's the Drug-Free Workplace Act of 1988. That's a
Thank
United
you.
States code, and the Drug-Free Workplace Act, which is a state law as well. So,
we're complying with the law.
We're complying with the federal and state laws. I didn't read those
laws. This is a federal state law.
Well, the federal and state law. I know I didn't read both the federal or the state law. I don't know if Dean did.
No, but as it comes through the press, these are the actual recommendations from the press reports, which are the IASB reports, where they filter through this and say, okay, here's what we think is the proper interpretation of this, and this coincides exactly with that.
Right, so they have a full-time staff that looks at these laws and then draft these policies.
Thank God.
In accordance with
yeah.
No, I just got it right because we don't have.
Yeah.
No, I just, you know, when you have policy, you want enforceability. I don't see how you do it, but okay. I was just curious about that.
I think it's a good question.
There's another one I want to make a comment on, especially for the board members here, and that is to pay particular attention to policy 5:90 under general personnel, and it's as the abused and neglected child reporting.
That's page 114 of the board report.
Yeah, 114 of the board report. And on that page, about a third of the way down or more, there's a line that says Abused and Neglected Child Reporting Act, ANCRA school code. I would urge you to take a look at that. There's a new definition for what an abused child is. It isn't physical abuse. It can be being in the presence of an adult who's using an illegal substance. That's considered abuse. And the reason I think it's important for you all to review that is further down in this same policy on page 2 of 2, it talks about special school board member responsibilities, and that each individual school board member must, if an allegation is raised to the member during an open or closed school board meeting, that a student is abused child as defined in the Act, direct or cause the school board to direct the superintendent or other equivalent school administrator comply with the requirement of the Act concerning reporting of child abuse. So we actually have a specific part of this that is our responsibility, and to do that, you should probably go review the report. It's really easy. If you put it into Google, it'll pop right up. The definition's near the top. It's about a page long. Go ahead and take the time to read the definition.
It's a good heads up.
Appreciate that. I think you'll be more trying to control me from hurting the person that did that. So,
hopefully I'm pretty sure that would be the case for most of the members of the board. So,
is there a board using a board member?
On a vote.
It's called democracy.
Yes, it is.
I had a question about the concussion policy, the new one. So,
do you have the exact number?
Soccer net.
Is it hard to?
It's 7. It's 7.
There's a lot of
115. No, 145, excuse me.
145?
Yeah. And it's not more of a policy, but it's more towards now that we have formal policies and formal actions, how are we going to get that specialized person who's going to be able to diagnose a concussed student athlete?
It actually doesn't require you to do that, though. The policy does. Just if you believe it has any of those symptoms, then you have to pull them out. That's the way it reads.
Just any of them?
If you feel like you have to pull them out, there's a protocol
supposed to bring them back.
Yeah. And that protocol is they basically have to have a certified trainer, which I don't believe we have.
Right.
Or a doctor.
Right. So
they have to have a doctor.
Right. So what we've done is, if we're okay with this, we're saying a liaison person. To assume that a student athlete is concussed, and then the only way they can come back, because we don't have certified trainers, is through a doctor's appointment.
I actually think that should be more restrictive, because the parent could be a doctor.
You think that should be part of what?
I think it'd be more restrictive than just a doctor. I actually wrote that note down, because parents can be doctors, and they could waive their kid to play, and I don't think that's wise. But that's how the policy is written, and this was what was recommended to you.
Can I ask, though, and Joe, to your point,
yes.
At the high school level, they do a baseline concussion test.
Yeah, any
student that's going to be in an activity their freshman year. So then, if they have an event, then they can have the concussion test and then juxtapose it against that baseline. But in our policy here under 7305, it doesn't list that. It says it goes right into a student advocate to define symptoms and behaviors, right?
That
we don't do baseline.
We have no one to do the baseline. That's correct, and that's a problem, and that's a big issue. And somebody figuring out if somebody is concussed without a baseline, it really, you know, the only really way you can do it is if it's a severe concussion. But anyways, it's what the policy is suggested as from where you guys are.
Correct.
But this is. Can I ask this question? This is for. This could be certainly for our athletics, softball. Yeah. certainly track, I suppose, if you got hit in the head with something or whatever, but we have a lot of kids that play sports outside of school day at this time of year, and if they are injured, then, you know, I'm assuming we find out about that so that we can make the right accommodations at school for them, whether it's to get, have, you know, notes taken for them or whatever it might be if they can't sit in the classroom.
Absolutely. The parent would notify us through a doctor's note saying, concussed, these are the symptoms, struggling with concentration after school, tired, whatever they may be, because the concussion can be a variety of different issues and how it impacts each student. And I agree with Joe. I think it needs to come from a doctor. I do worry about just the trainer. If you don't have that background in concussions, that's worrisome.
So how do we monitor this policy?
It's a piece where one of our coaches pull a student from an event and saying, you must return with a signed form freeing you to participate again. That would be the... So the onus is on our coaches and ensuring that that policy is being adhered to.
But if they're not trained to identify it, do we say, hey, any type of like head-to-head contact or head contact or head injury results in automatically pulling someone out? Or how do we...
It's a good question, because I think we need to train our coaches on concussion symptoms, what does it look like, so they can actually follow through on the policy. It's a great point. It's something Lori and I can look into.
We need to train the coaches on what the symptoms are for a concussion so that they can be aware if one does occur.
Yep.
This policy clearly puts it on the burden on your shoulders.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we need to make sure that they're...
Well, and the parents as well. Yep.
Correct.
That's correct.
To do the follow-up.
So, John, that's something we will look into.
Yeah. I would restrict the release to a doctor who's not a parent.
I would echo your sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
You would do what, John?
I'd restrict the release to a doctor who is not a parent.
Not their parent?
Not their parent.
Of that child.
Not a parent. That's better said than a parent.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a question about policy 6110. I'm sorry, I don't have page numbers because I printed mine out.
No, you're okay.
But it's under instruction programs for students at risk of academic failure and or dropping out of school. And so the line that was added, I think, says, and may include without limitation one or more of the following. But those bullets are all the same as in the previous policy. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so what we're doing is simply clarifying that it could be these, but it might be something else that a principal, a psychologist, a social worker, a teacher brings forward.
Correct. And a lot of the changes within SPRESS are within footnotes, small changes to the language.
Right.
Oftentimes it's not a major revision to the policy itself. Many of them are within the footnotes, and what are they referencing? You see a lot of reference changes.
Okay. But what this says to me is that it just it allows for more other bullets that might not be considered or on the list, but that there could be some other issues that a child at risk needs to be
absolutely
observed for. And then, and Paul, just out of curiosity, is some of this also part of our PBIS?
I'm not finding it online, so I'm leaning over Sam's shoulder right now.
Okay. I just wondered if some of the, you know, these programs align with our PBIS, that intervention piece.
When it comes to the failure piece, we would see at times some behavioral issues. But for the most part, these pieces won't be touching on those. We may bring that data to the table. It could be helpful in painting the entire picture as I look at it over Sam's shoulder.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to see how that aligned with
us. Okay. I'm having too much trouble navigating.
Me too.
Me too. So, okay, any other?
So the new
page 166. This is the independent reading letter.
Okay. Yeah.
Why is this new? Didn't we do this last year?
You want to start there, Sam?
Well, we made a slight change.
No. I think it's new from the sense that we added some language to it. We changed it around a little bit.
If you want to do that one,
let's get right into
6210, which is 162. The base policy remains the same.
It's towards the end of the board.
Yeah, 162 out of 169. So then you go to 6210 AP, which is all new, brand new, which we haven't used before.
Yeah.
And the gist of this is selection review of supplemental materials for classroom use, which to me means anything from a YouTube piece on the smart board to a book in the classroom library to a newspaper article that's brought in for use, classroom use. And what this does is, this was created by Karen, I believe, right, Karen?
It turned out to be a very collaborative effort. between policy, Karen, and a number of individuals to really come up with this.
Right, and what it does is that it goes to the PLCs, the building PLCs, to review and vet materials with these eight specific questions of, you know, why do we need these materials? And if the PLC approves it, then it's okay to be used in the classrooms. So if not, then it goes, there's a review process that goes all the way, not all the way, goes to Karen's position, to decide if the materials are appropriate or not.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
If I'm a social studies teacher, something about Russia, and I want to take something from the current news, I couldn't do that on the day it happened. I'd have to go to the PLC to get this YouTube clip of, Russian tanks going into the Crimea to show that, because there could be violence and all these things. And then I'd do that at my next PLC meeting, and if they deemed it met the characteristics that is appropriate, then I could show it a day or 4 days later or whatever it is.
And the PLCs meet on a regular basis.
But they may not meet
that day.
That's the idea.
Exactly. Yes. So there is some of this with current events that we might miss, and thus may not be a current event, because by the time I want to show that, four more events happened. Mm. So, okay.
How often do the PLCs meet? Do we know?
At the junior high, they meet regularly. I mean, they have the ability to meet daily.
If they wanted to, they could call
PLC. If I'm a teacher and I really want this to be shown in my class, I can go to my peers and say, hey, this is something that I want to do. So it's not going to stop what I just described from happening under a good circumstance.
At the elementary, they don't meet as frequently, but typically,
what I said,
they're made more at a district level, so they would have been vetted through that process.
Yeah, my example is more of a junior high.
We discussed that in policy quite a bit and spent time on that. And the idea is to have a set of criteria that doesn't make this onerous. So they can meet, they can discuss it, and they can hit on the topics and agree. And certainly, if it's something that a particular member of the PLC says, this may not be age appropriate, they're going to slow down a little bit at that point. Then they'll spend a little bit more time on it. If it's something that's current in the news and that isn't even a question, they could probably do it in a matter of minutes to be able to clear it out with the way we wrote the policy.
Yeah, I have to say.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, since Dean brought this up, the piece that I had some notes around is what you were just talking about, and Sam, what you introduced. And that is that, under selection and review of supplemental materials for classroom use, it says staff and their PLC. So staff refers to the math teacher or the student teacher or the LA literacy teacher, whoever that is, and then their particular PLC. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. And, you know, what I think is important about this set of criteria is that it puts the responsibility in a consistent opportunity for conversation around the kind of materials that they want to use, so that they themselves are, you know, we put this back into the leadership of the teachers, and I think that that is important, so that it goes back to the professional learning community, which is part of their learning as a group, and being able to, you know, assess and evaluate and test each other in terms of what they want to use. So I think that that's important. I think question number 8, when I first read it, my gut reaction was, the question is, are there any additional reasons why the material should go through further review? Yeah. And that's always a great kind of last question, because it's open-ended, certainly. Mm-hmm. I felt that it was really broad, but then my sense is, and you know, Sam and Dean share with us, it's meant to be broad so that as they go through these other 7, if there's any other concern or red flag, then there's an opportunity to vet it in this appropriate conversation. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yes, but I wouldn't characterize it that way, though. I would characterize it in, if it doesn't fit in question 1 through 7, is there another valid question that isn't asked that would make this material relevant and able to be used? I think we're talking about the same thing. We're just coming at it from different angles.
Yeah, it just leaves the door. It leaves the door open for a member of the PLC who's, you know, listening to the conversation, might have a differing opinion, to be able to say, here's one thing we haven't considered.
Yeah.
And to be able to put that on the table. So it might, you know, jumpstart the process to say, yeah, we're good, or it might slow the process down, but it's being done within that teacher community with each other.
And that for us was very important too, that the teachers, and allow them to use their professional judgment to make these decisions. That's why we hire them. That's why we trust them to make these types of decisions.
Sounds like it has to be unanimous, though, the way I'm interpreting the policy.
Yeah, if someone's saying, ooh, boy, that's feeling a little, you know, it's not age appropriate, it's done, and it needs to go up to Karen for final review.
And how many people are in a PLC?
It could range from 3 to 5 to 6 people, whatever PLC, you know, if it's a grade level team or department. It could range.
I will say that for me, this is a much better policy than we had before. My only concern is it doesn't address the supplemental materials that are currently in teachers' classrooms, because this is a policy on a going forward basis. It's not retroactive. So there's still materials out there that have not been vetted by other PLCs or by anyone other than the classroom teacher. And that concerns me. And I've had that concern ever since this issue arose, you know, months ago.
Sam, is that remediated by the fact that policy has included now this updated letter? And, you know, and I think actually in the policy where it goes down to parent notification, this was something that was important to me, and that is the accountability back to the parent. You know, we heard that call for the parent to be the final arbiter of what I would want my child to be able to read or not read. And so it does put the responsibility squarely on the back of the parent to say, you know, Erica, I want you to bring home you know, a copy of every book you're going to read independently, and we'll talk about it. You know, then that's theirs to be responsible for. So does that remediate some of the current, to me, it would remediate some of the current, you know, material in the room.
It does. And what you're referring to is the 6210E1, the letter that was drafted last fall, probably, and what Patrick earlier alluded to, which is the page 2 of this letter.
Yeah.
Which gives parents an option of agreeing to let the student and the teacher make the selections, or the parent is requesting essentially a meeting with the teacher to find out what books or materials their student will potentially be using.
Exactly.
And yeah, it does remediate it for me a lot, actually, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have the concerns about the the classroom libraries that are, have not been vetted. But maybe with this letter and with the new AP, those concerns will be mitigated, worked out when the teachers get more comfortable with the process.
Well, there's a process now.
Yes.
So
well, there.
So that if it does, there's a process that at least people have visibility of that.
And there was a process then. I mean, that's not.
It's a more robust process.
It's definitely more robust.
Yeah.
And it, in that vein, John, going back to 6210 AP, the procedures for reconsideration, the old AP was the superintendent, and then it went straight to the board. Basically the review slash appeal process for parents. Now there is many steps. That starts with the PLC, and goes to the principal, then goes to the assistant superintendent, Karen, then goes to Paul, and then finally goes to the Board of Education. So there are many levels to try to resolve an issue before it escalates to the board, as it did last year.
Do you guys feel that that process happens quick enough based on this procedure?
Yes, I do. I think it can't go any quicker than that. I mean, there is roughly a 10-day, well, it starts with 10 days and then goes to 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that process is sufficient enough to allow the next person on the level to be educated in such a way to make an informed decision before having to move on to either finish the process or moving up to another level of review.
Well, and it doesn't stop anyone from coming to the board or sending an email if they want to.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. No.
And it doesn't stop anybody from the administration side to move it along quicker.
Right.
Or the board to move it along quicker. So as I was thinking about some of these pieces, I really wanted to make sure, especially when it was the board, knowing that you only meet twice a month, that you had the right amount of days in there. And you also want, in my former role, I dealt with this on a number of occasions, you really do want to vet the material. You want to understand it. You want to see the research behind it. You want to spend time with such a, you know, if it does come down to a book, you want to spend the necessary time really looking at it and making sure that others have given their input through the process, as opposed to going right up to the Board of Education. I like this process. I think it really vets out the material, be it a book, be it a movie, be it whatever it is. I think it really vets it out, and we understand it at a deeper level prior to it coming to the board.
Well, what is this?
And my hope would be that because of what has been built into this policy in terms of the parents' responsibility to sign off or to have the classroom conference, is that this would be the last line of defense to have something reconsidered. That, in fact, the parents' responsibility with their individual student or students, and the teacher being made, you know, aware of that sensitivity, will you know, be doing that at the classroom level. And that if a book is abandoned and there's a conversation between the parent and the child around that, the parent always has the opportunity to come back to the teacher and say, you know, I was letting Erica make some choices. I'm not comfortable with the choices she's making.
Yeah.
I need to set up a conference so we have a three-way with her and we work out a new process. I mean, it's an evergreen process, you know, so that folks aren't tied to making a check mark on a box and then not you know, being accountable to that throughout the year.
Right.
Good point.
The E3, the request for supplemental materials reconsideration form, is that something for the teachers? Is that what they're supposed to do if they object to escalate it up?
That's for the parents.
This is for the parent?
Right.
Yeah.
So
where are we looking?
It's E3, the request for supplementary materials reconsideration form. So, yeah.
Got it.
This would be if somebody has a problem with a book, if we went back to last year, the Perks book, this would be filled out.
It just seems like, I mean, if I'm a parent, I don't want you to read this book. You're asking me to fill out 8 questions that I'm like,
No, you just, if you're a parent and you say, I want to have say in it, you mark that box. That's what you got to do. Then you come in and talk to the teacher.
Oh.
That's if you don't want anybody else to read the book. If you don't think the book belongs in school, that's...
So this is a teacher, not a... This is what I'm getting.
No, it's a parent.
It's a parent that says, this book shouldn't be in the schools, period, and here's why.
Right. Not only for my kid, but for any kid.
So this is not... If I object, I got to fill this out for my
children. No, you just check that one little box.
Come in and talk to the teacher, and you'll work it all out.
This would be used for the perks.
This is the one that goes up the chain.
This is the one that goes up the chain.
Yes.
Good.
I like that.
That's good clarification, though.
It's the perks.
Yes.
It's the perks.
It's the perks policy.
The perks policy.
So, my last question on this. We talked about notification going out 3 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. That's still the signed document?
Yes, the one in here with the boxes.
That's the E1 or the E1?
The one that we wrote last year.
2110E1.
Yes.
Okay.
Good last question.
Okay, we're good on that one? All right, let's go back to the expense.
Yep, I had a couple questions about that.
Which is
153,
page
153.
Well, all right. 152 is 560, general personnel policy. There's been a little change, but not a lot of change. It just refers to the pre-authorization form that's been created that is one of the exhibits.
Mm-hmm.
John, go ahead.
So the new change here is I fill out a
pre-trip authorization
expense form that must be submitted.
Yep, correct. And approved.
For just travel-related expenses and professional development. Not school supplies.
No, you're right. Yeah.
Okay.
Those fall under the purchase card.
That's all.
That one.
So this is outside of the.
People. This is it. Really, it is because we had that conversation and we have a policy for that.
Okay.
That goes through an approval process.
And order of magnitude, the spend here for professional development and travel related.
So if they're going to use district funds for professional development or travel, they will fill this piece out, even if it's I'm signing up for a conference, it's $85, let us know who's going to be paying for that. You'd submit that form. You know, if it's a school base, the principal would just sign off on it there. The principal would take care of it.
I'm just asking order of magnitude, what's the spend?
You mean annually on all of
this? Yes.
Do you have any idea what we spend on travel?
Oh, I totally missed your question.
I think we talked about it at some point during the policy.
I'll get you a number.
The point of the form is to get all of the expenses in one form. So it isn't like here's how much the airfare might be, but then somewhere else. We want to pull it all together because first, it allows them to make a good decision based on, what's the cost of this action going to be in the district? Second is we get FOIA'd on these things a lot. When we do, we'll have a form already there. We don't have to go through the files to find all this. It'll be very simple to provide the information for this.
So how are we using technology to enable this? Is this going to be on the web? You pull it down, you fill it out.
That is the whole
SharePoint site. And
that's a local intranet site. You post several forms on it.
What we're hoping to transition to is that they're all going to be electronic and that we would have a flow through. So if it started at Hadley and it needed Karen's approval, it would be electronic. It would go to her desk. She would mark one of the boxes, which would then move it on to Bob's department for accounting of it.
They're working out the workflow.
Yep.
I mean, I'm assuming it's going to add some incremental work. So any way we can use technology to...
Absolutely.
...to put workflow in place and signature and routing and stuff.
Yeah, we are talking about that right now.
Okay. And then, is everyone done with that one, with the form?
Just on the form itself. Erica.
I have one potential correction. The current mileage allowance is 56.5 cents, and we have 55.5. So you might want to check that. I know that's my mileage allowance. So, and I think it's consistent across
mileage. That's not in the 560 that we're talking about now, or is it?
It's in the form we listed.
It's in the form, John. Yeah, where it has the deport employee name and that kind of that.
We'll double check that one.
But the policy.
Did it in
the policy speaks
IRS.
To the current IRS.
Yeah.
Right, so we may just eliminate that.
No. And that'll just need to be, you know, that'll need to be tagged or flagged each year if it goes up or down for any reason.
You can go up there in the air.
Okay. You know, in one of the.
I agree.
One of the pieces here around that pre-authorization, it's important that, you know, either Karen, myself, whomever it's sent to, that we're, it's our responsibility to look it over from the big picture. Is everybody renting a car? Now, we don't need everybody renting a car. We need one person renting a car, or we need a Suburban so we can transport eight people. A lot of that onus will be on Karen, myself, and any other assistant sup or director who this comes to.
Right.
And that was what the board members, Dean and Sam, really wanted to ensure that we have those conversations, that we didn't just set some standard policy of you can only spend the night doing this or that. There's a lot of rationale within this policy that I really appreciated the two board members giving me, Karen, and others that authority to say, no, that doesn't make sense, or that makes perfect sense. I see why you're doing this activity, and we're going to give you approval or denial from it.
And I think you'll find that flexibility in the AP, the 560 AP. Which is
yeah, I see it.
So if we move to the AP under transportation, do we use any technology to understand what the lowest commercial rate is? And that just seems like that's hard to. I mean, it's certainly what you want to do, but you know, how do we know what the lowest commercial rate is? I assume, a car company has a travel system we use, and it tells us here's the rate. But sometimes the lowest rate is a connection through, Dallas when you're going to St. Louis.
That's a good point.
We had those exact discussions, and we don't have the luxury of having that much travel to be able to afford that kind of infrastructure work, which is why we wanted the supervisors of these folks to take a look at this and ask those questions and maybe pull some things up and look at it. Because what we don't want is to say, this airline ticket is $12 cheaper and you need to make three stops.
Right.
You know, that's why we want them to take a look at it. On the other hand, if you're traveling and it's $1,000 and the next ticket is $500 and it's because you like that airline better, they're not going to allow that to happen. That's what the review is supposed to be for.
Okay, I mean, I understand the intent of it. It's fine. It's just without the tools to enforce it. Sometimes at least limiting it to a coach fare. Or the lowest coach there, or something not.
Do we have that in here?
No, you took that out.
Coach it out.
Because, you know.
We have commercial rate.
Commercial rate is in.
Yeah, commercial
coach
rate available at the time of booking.
Is out.
Because there's so many different things they call coach now, too. It's part of the whole process.
It's very difficult to.
Different airlines do different things.
To label it correctly where it's maxed into a rate.
And
so
then and then I noticed that if driving is more expensive than flying, you must fly. That's the way I interpreted the policy. And what if you have people that are afraid of flying?
Let the superintendent.
You would send me that pre, and then within that pre, there's a box that says, tell me why. That's what they would tell me. You know, it's going to cost me this much for whatever therapy session to go through so I can get on that plane.
So our intent of the policy was to make sure that someone had oversight, was asking those questions, but not locking that person into making silly decisions or decisions that we then have to come back and justify later.
I've got to tell you, finance committee is a lot better than policy.
I got to tell you, it was pretty good, though. This was a good conversation.
It took a little longer than we thought
because
of the number. You see all the policies here. There's a lot of policies.
I
read all these numbers.
It was a lot of redlining and reading. Yes.
Paul, out of curiosity, is this similar to something you used in the past of your previous district?
Similar. It all had to be pre-approved. Everything had to be pre-approved. We had more of a flow-through system that John was talking about. So this is similar. That you, to me, the pre-approval is critical to what how we do our work around here.
Mm-hmm. Good work. Thank you both.
Yeah, they did a great job.
If there's no other comments on this, I wanna acknowledge Maureen's effort on this. Sam and Paul and I and Maureen sit on this committee, but Maureen does all the work to get this all put together, to get all of this together. You cannot believe the amount of red lines and reviews and keeps us all straight. And this is a monumental task. We actually agreed we weren't going to print it off anymore because literally it was getting to be this high to go through it all. So we do it all electronically. It's working out very well. And it's a tremendous amount of work with all the red lines.
Yeah. And I'd also like to recognize Maureen's colleague, Nancy, the two of them together.
Yep.
One, they keep me sane every day. Or at least they try to.
It's a lot of work.
Putting this together is an incredible effort. And the number of policies we went through were pretty amazing.
So I think and all these policies were good except for the concussion policy, right? Yeah, that we're going to
look at that.
The one I want to tweak. Yeah.
Yep.
Is that a fair statement of where we are at this point?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Good.
All right.
Good job, Greg.
Upcoming meetings.
Yes. Excellent work.
Upcoming meetings. April 14, 2014, Board of Education special meeting, 7:30 p.m.
This is just a regular.
Sorry. Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30 p.m. here at the Central Services Office. And April 28, 2014, Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30 p.m. also here at the Central Services Office. Are there any other matters to be considered by the Board at this time?
I had one question. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, I'm not on mute.
Wait, what? We can't hear you.
Hello? I love calling in. One quick thing, and I just wanted to mention this. This came in the Churchill email. You know how we all get the different schools, the electronic news. And I just want to highlight this because I think this aligns back to some of our STEAM work. But ArtSmart, which is a program that's been in and out of the schools, over many years, I know I was involved with it myself, kind of left and is now back. And for Churchill, and I think maybe some of the other schools are doing this, they're aligning it with the STEAM math teacher so that there's this additional infusion of art into that that rubric. So I just wanted to highlight that as a good example of parent support and participation with our level 2 and level 3 parents and their STEAM teacher to get art, in that role back into the classroom in a kind of 20-30 minute presentation. So that's neat to see that we can bring that program and align them in with our curriculum. And the other thing is I've gotten 4 or 5 emails or phone calls in the last couple weeks about Hadley graduation date. And I promised that I would ask this under other, and the question is essentially when will the decision be made as, travel and grandparents and all that stuff is being trying to be sorted out.
We are looking at a date of June 10th, but again, that is all weather and natural phenomenons not occurring within our district. So we are looking at that June 10th date. For the Hadley graduation at Beister.
Oh, is there a requirement?
No.
Sorry. I knew that Steve Hadley sent out an email to that effect saying June 10th as a tentative date.
Good.
That's the date as of now.
Yep.
But, it has not been finalized.
And quite honestly, we'll probably have to stay on that graduation, but if we have another cold or another weather event, the eighth graders would have to come back, and boy, they would just love that. That would just be the greatest. I know, so don't get that one out there amongst the eighth graders.
No more cold, no more weather. Yeah,
there's no requirement that, let's say we had 5 days of snow, we could still have graduation, right? And then they could come.
They would just have to come back.
That's
but I just want to make sure. It would not be very popular.
We didn't push the date back because of the snow days at this point, did we?
We did originally.
Right.
Yeah.
We did originally because there was just no other way to do it. And then finally Steve was like, I've got to get Beister registered. I have to have this site. If he waited any longer, you just do.
Clearly planning their holidays.
So let's hope for decent spring weather. Okay. Yeah, I know.
So
I just
we do
cursed
have,
us.
It's so cute that you're new and you don't get this. That's okay.
Well, that, I mean, we haven't had
this. Decent spring weather.
So just to clarify this, Paul, it's a letter went out, email went out to Hadley parents. He called us a tentative date, but we do have the Easter book.
I believe so. I didn't get the letter, so I'm looking at parents. We've got that.
Okay.
I was copied on the email. So that's
all right, good.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Good question.
That's it.
Anything else? Okay. Public participation. Anybody present at this time that would like to address the board? No? Okay. The board has determined there's a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. We have a motion adjourned to closed session.
Motion.
Motion by Mr. Elger,
second
by Mr. Paczynski,
and a third by Mr. Kenwood.
And a second A by Mr. Kenwood. Roll call, please, Mrs. Stecker.
Mrs. Malkin.
9 years.
Erica.
Erica. Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante.
Yes.
Mr. Paczynski. No.
Yes.
No,
Mr. Kenwood.
Yes.
Mr. Elger.
Yes.
Mr. Black.
Yes, that's 6 yeas, no nays. Motion carries. The board will not be taking action when it returns to open session. Time is 9:11. Back to open session. Time is 9:54. We need a motion to adjourn the meeting. Motion by...
No, I motioned. I motioned.
Kenwood motion.
Kenwood second motion.
Motion.
Todd, thank you so much.
Jump the gun.
Escalante, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries.
Thank you, Erica. Erica, I'm going to call you in a few minutes.
9:55. Thanks.
I'm going to call you in a few minutes, Erica.